I work abroad at a Japanese theme park. Another kid has gone missing. Part 3. I was now a cast member, playing a character named Mr. New York at a theme park. They gave me a traditional white baker's costume, complete with a chef hat embroidered with stars and stripes. My direction was to play a stereotypically strict American cooking show judge. I had to evaluate pastry creations assembled by Japanese children on this tiny island. With less than an hour of impromptu training, I was taken to the confection showroom where kids started lining up to show me the virtual cakes they had spent all season constructing on their phones. I hated being back at the confection showroom. It reminded me of all the horrors I had encountered yesterday, as well as the elevator breakdown I experienced this morning. But my new workload was so dense that the fears quickly became background noise. I embraced the busyness.
"Hello, Mr. New York,"
each excitable child would say and hold up their phone.
"Please judge my work. Thank you."
Their digital cakes would be forwarded to my judge console, basically a waist-height touchscreen that let me inspect their make-believe confections. It was up to me to grade their dessert and decide which animation would trigger on the big hologram in the middle of the showroom. If the kid's cake was elaborate and made with lots of rare flavors, then they would play the hologram where Bakery Park's pig mascot, Buchan, feasts on their creation.
"It's delicious,"
the pig would sing as I applauded the submission and transferred the award. The children in the showroom would laugh and cheer, celebrating their friend who received a 3-star achievement. However, if I received a newbie cake smeared with too much frosting, I would put on my best Simon Cowell frown and trigger an animation where Buchan made a joke.
"Oh, reminds me of when I ate trash."
The hologram pig would wink and then eat only half of the kid's cake. The guests would still howl with laughter, which was good, because I didn't want to be dealing with mopey kids. They seemed to like getting roasted as much as they got praised. It was part of my strict Mr. New York niche. And although it is hard to admit, it actually became pretty fun. However, there was one boy who was a real pain. He wore a baseball cap with a Pikachu on it.
Pika, Pika.
After getting only 1 star, Pika Kid threw a tantrum, knocking over a trash can.
"Not fair! Not fair! You're not even real! You're just a terrible actor!"
I ignored these comments and gave him the scores I thought he deserved. But then he re-lined up again and showed me the same plain strawberry frosting cake.
"Give me 3 stars, you phony! My mom said you're a stupid foreigner who doesn't belong here anyway!"
I stayed in character and said, "Gamenag boya, minichi haraku wake up jani nanda." Sorry, kid, the sun can't shine every day. Then his 12-year-old foot kicked me right in the shin, surprisingly hard. I stumbled back and tried to regain my composure. I was sorting through the most assertive and age-appropriate scold I could say in Japanese when a loud rumbling came from the floor. The 6 children in line all screamed and hugged the wall. The Pika kids stared in awe as the LEDs turned on again. A dizzying swirl of pixels slowly formed Buchan. The cartoon pig appeared with furrowed brows and raised hackles. The red light shot out of his eyes and mouth, giving him the appearance of a demonic jack-o'-lantern.
"Didn't your parents teach you manners?"
The hologram squealed and pointed.
Your cake isn't good enough!
A bolt of electricity shot out of the pig's gloved hand and struck the Pika Kid's hat. It caught fire.
Pika, Pika!
The boy screamed bloody murder, tossing his hat and scrambling out of the entrance door with the rest of the children. I likewise tried to run like a coward, but I tripped on my oversized chef apron.
Shit!
Before I could speed crawl away, the entrance door sealed shut on its own. The children had escaped, but I was trapped inside.
No, 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 no!
When I looked back at Buchan, I could see Mashumaro had materialized now as well, floating with his signature smile. The tanuki wrapped his arm around the snorting pig like they were the best of friends.
Why hello, James Naka, employee number 604373. Glad to see you are enjoying your work.
I stood up and ran towards the locked door, slamming it over and over with my fists. I should have known some crazy shit was bound to happen again. I was deluded by 3 hours of normalcy and my own wishful thinking.
No need to run, James. We're not going to hurt you.
Mashumaro's eyes were black holes staring right through me.
You've been doing so well, awarding all the hardest working, smartest youngsters with correct scores.
The confection showroom had a circular walkway around the light panel center. Although the holograms should have been regulated to the center, somehow the mascots were floating past the LEDs and over the railing. Mashumaro floated up to my right, his entire body blocking the walkway. Likewise, Buchan came down to my left, blocking the path as well.
I agree with all of your awards.
Buchan patted his belly. It squished like a ball of dough.
It makes my belly so full. It makes my belly feel good.
Mashumaro chuckled.
I'm so happy when my friend is happy. And when I'm happy, my friend is happy. A good system, don't you think?
Both of them approached like they were toying with a mouse. I held out my hands in a pitiful defense.
Please, let me go.
Mashumaro nodded.
If you keep helping us, I'll make sure Aiko gets returned to you safe and sound.
My legs buckled at the sound of my girlfriend's name.
That's right, James.
The tanuki grinned.
Aiko will be released.
I think my heart missed 4 beats.
Released?
But first you must choose the daily super winner.
Buchan bounced off his own bottom with a squeal.
Indeed, you must award a child 4 stars.
Mashumaro pointed at me.
Pick the cleverest cake maker of all.
They were floating uncomfortably close. I could see the translucence of their pixelated skin and parts of the showroom behind them. From what I could tell, they were still holograms, but I didn't feel safe running through them.
Okay, I'll do it.
I shut my eyes, willing the nightmare to go away. I brought my hands over my eyes to further shield myself, and that's when I felt the warm wet spots on my cheeks. How long had I been crying? I must have stood there in darkness, like a child holding bed covers over their face for over 5 minutes before I found enough courage to peek between my fingers. When I did, the pig and tanuki were gone. The entrance door was open. Outside, the terrified kids were wrangled by nearby staff. They were taken to a playroom where they were showered with distractions and games. Their parents were awarded several free day passes to apologize for the special malfunction at the new attraction. I spoke to no one and bolted back to the employee welcome center. I was over being traumatized. After seeing a kid's head almost get fried, I had to get word out that something was fucked. My supervisor was at his desk doing some paperwork. Out of all the staff at Bakery Park, I trusted him the most. He was the only one to commend me and call me brave for being the only Westerner to work at such an obscure Japanese place. He had always liked that Aiko had brought me here.
Usami-san, I'm sorry to barge in, I said while literally barging in. But there's a hacker at this theme park. He's hijacked the electronics at the confection showroom. He almost killed a kid.
Naku-san, please don't yell. Come in.
I entered his tiny office, and he shut the translucent door. Several employees at the center looked through the glass. They could see I was freaked out. I didn't care. I wanted everyone to hear me. It's the second time I've been in the showroom where some awful terrorist entity shut the doors and tried to lock me in, I said. It's not safe there.
Terrorist entity?
Usami-san put his papers away.
What do you mean?
Someone has infiltrated systems around the park and, well, not even just the park. I've gotten threats via Bakery Park Hunt. I opened the official app on my phone. I left it open on his desk, hoping that maybe the corrupted Mashumaru would send something. I've gotten messages here where the hacker has insinuated that he's kidnapped kids on this island. He's even said that he's got Aiko captured somewhere. Aiko Akatsuma. One of your employees is in danger.
Whoa, now slow down. I spoke to Aiko earlier today. She's in Shimado.
What? His eyes were calm, unbelieving my incredulity. I hadn't received any texts from Aiko since this morning.
You spoke to her? I asked. What did she say?
She told me what you said in the morning. She had took the medical helicopter to the mainland hospital. And that she's returning by ferry tomorrow.
I didn't know how that was possible. Did Aiko actually call him? Did someone mimicking Aiko's voice call him?
She told me she was escorting the child you rescued in the forest yesterday.
This yarn of confusion was tangling too far. I decided to unravel it a little.
Usami-san, you should know that we never saved any child in the forest. It was a lie we were pressured to say.
He looked at me skeptically.
But I see you have the forest stamp on your wrist.
I looked at the skin below my left palm. The little insignia literally seemed to glow, drawing attention to itself. Forest. They forced the stamp on me.
They forced the stamp, visitation stamp, on you?
Yes, the park guards did. He looked at me with particular scrutiny. If I had been able to wash the stamp off my wrist by now, I would have. But soap and water did nothing.
Why would they forcibly put a pox stamp on your wrist?
To maintain a conspiracy, I wanted to say. But I could tell this was already becoming too much. Listen, Usami-san, forget the stamp. The point is there are kids at risk at this park, and we need to intervene.
Naku-san, I appreciate you telling me all of this, but I've been specifically instructed not to raise unnecessary alarm.
But this is a necessary alarm.
All of the children who have been missing on this island have been offered the park property. You know that.
Usami-san, with all due respect, you should see the kid who almost lost his head a few minutes ago. Then my phone chirped.
It was a message from the Bakery Park Hunt app. The new and improved confection showroom has been restored. Drop by to show off your flavors and earn some rewards. Smiley face. My supervisor looked at the phone and then at me.
It looks like they may have fixed whatever your technical difficulties were.
Bullshit, I said in English, then switched back to Japanese. That's impossible. He stared at me unimpressed.
Why don't you go check?
I shook my head. There's no way I'm going back there.
Naka-san, your shift isn't over.
Haven't you been listening to me? A volley of sparks almost killed a kid. I'm not risking my life. Usami-san stood up and loomed over me.
James, let me be frank. You're a talented Westerner. You speak Japanese very well. But in this country, you do not even crash into an office like you have and perform such an outburst. I'm being very lenient because you're very young and you haven't been here a long time. But trust me, if you do this to the wrong person, you will be fired on the spot.
I stood up to match his height. Well, all right then, fire me.
No, I will not fire you, and you will not leave in the middle of your shift. This is crass and disrespectful to me and everyone who had helped you so far. What would Aiko think, We have norms here that even Americans must obey.
Aiko would support my safety above all. He tried to hide a long, exasperated sigh, but he did not hide it very well.
If you must insist that you're feeling that unsafe, then I'll go with you.
The walk back was a wordless, icy cold experience. We didn't even look at each other as we ambulated through the thinning crowds. By the time we had reached the banner-strewn confection showroom, it looked like word may have spread about the earlier incident. The crowds had completely left, and I felt like leaving too. I was willing to finish my shift, out of respect for Aiko getting me this job in the first place, but only if I was demoted back to general laborer. I'd rather clean roller coaster puke than face Mashumaru in that locked building again. I told as much to Asami-san, and he shook his head.
You will finish what your new contract requires you to finish. You don't get to change the rules.
He entered the confection showroom and beckoned me to follow, but I stayed outside the perimeter of the door. You're going to find a burnt baseball cap with a Pikachu on it, I said, pointing to the center of the room. That's the proof. I'm not making things up. There's something dangerous here. Usami-san huffed and looked around, unable to find this supposed proof.
Naka-san, come inside already. Don't be ridiculous.
I told him no. He activated the pre-programmed animations and watched Buchan eat default-shaped cakes. The holograms all worked as they were supposed to. Despite our acrimony, he was still double-checking everything, looking behind each plastic cake display and trash bin. I appreciated that he was at least feigning concern. But regardless, I was staying outside. I crossed my arms and turned away, checking my phone for an update from Aiko. But all I had was the cryptic text from the morning. 9:12 a.m. Something is wrong with Kato. He's making weird guttural sounds that the doctors don't understand. And he's talking now, but in an old man's voice, like a really old man's voice. He keeps saying, "More will come, more will come." I'm really scared. The parents are angry with me. They think I did something to their son. They're not letting me leave. Wherever Aiko was, her phone must have been taken away or powered off. I didn't believe that Usami-san had received a call from her. Mashumaru claimed he would release Aiko if I obeyed his request, but I didn't trust that hacker terrorist for a second. I believed the move here was to wait it out until I could return to Nana Abusan's place for the night. If I hadn't heard from Aiko by then, I'd take a ferry to the mainland next morning and figure things out from there. Things were getting too crazy. I had to get away from this island.
Hey, James!
My supervisor's voice echoed from deep within the showroom.
Is this what you were talking about?
I wish I had just ignored the comment and committed to backing away. I really should have known something was up. But instead, I turned to peek inside the showroom and was met with a smiling hologram of Bu Chan. The pig stood only a foot away from me.
What?
The hog's doughy stomach burst into a dozen shimmering tentacles, each writhing and lashing like vicious whips. I didn't physically feel any of the whippings, but seconds after a tentacle smashed through me, it felt like a part of my body had been exposed to an electrical outlet. Within seconds, a painful spasm of electricity surged throughout my body. I crumpled to the ground. All my limbs seized up, followed by fingers. I couldn't even blink. Usami-san came over to me quickly and dragged me further into the building.
This didn't have to happen, you know.
I heard the door close. I heard another machinery activate. My supervisor leaned me up against something and squatted down to meet me eye to eye. He looked tired, sorrowful, as if he was regretting what he was doing, but nonetheless had to do it. He spoke in English, like he sometimes did to practice with me. His accent was broken, rushed a little around the edges, but I understood him perfectly well.
Fucking Gaijin, learn to play along!
Part 4. Children, dozens of children, maybe hundreds. When I regained consciousness, that's the first thought that entered my mind. Jesus Christ, there's a lot of them down here. And by here, I mean some kind of underground amphitheater with nightmarish rows of seats. Each seat, a black cage of interlaced ribs entrapping a motionless child who had their eyes and mouths sealed with wide, shining cables. It was probably the most horrific thing I had ever seen. I myself was surrounded by the metal ribs as well, except by my tall 25-year-old torso extended beyond the smaller cage designed for children. I had a few limbs sticking out, thank God. Judging by the unformality of all the other cages, my guess is that I was placed via some automated process that had gone unchecked, which meant that the black cables that should have been sealing my face were instead wrapped around my shin. It was tempting to call for help, to yell and see if someone else would respond. But of course, that might have been suicide. I didn't know where I was. Underground, maybe? I only knew that my supervisor, Usami-san, had paralyzed and sent me here. That bastard. I was stupid to tell him anything. I should have known he was part of the conspiracy amongst top brass at Bakery Park. They were all complicit in imprisoning the swathes of Japanese kids here. I remember my girlfriend Aiko said that only 3 children had gone missing at the theme park. How wrong we were. Those were clearly just the 3 the public knew about. I spent the first few minutes totally awestruck by the horror of it all. It was hard to believe I was staring in an inhuman prison designed exclusively for 6 to 12-year-olds. Cruelty incarnate. At the center of the amphitheater-like floor was a heap of LED panels undulating in a faint white glow, supplying light to the rest of the space. I watched patiently as one of the panels became bright pink and produced a hologram of a large cartoon pig with a cinnamon roll for a tail. It was Buchan. The light turned off, but the hologram remained, untethered to roam free. The pig squealed and spoke in aggressive Japanese.
Raiwuchu Kapasuro 478-97742.
Release capsule 478-97742. A child cage only a few rows down from me lifted into the air. Several spider-like legs emerged beneath it and skittered down to Buchan. The pig snorted and inspected the young boy.
Yakata, madu joki shi toroyo, stutsui koi.
Good. Still ripe. Follow me. The arachnid cradle waddled behind the hologram pig as he marched down an exit. The sound of the spider feet scraped and stabbed at the floor, echoing outwards until fading away. Good Lord. What have I gotten myself into? With my free hand, I grabbed and twisted at each of the ribs holding my chest in place. The metal was strong and unrelenting. But then I discovered an external hook-shaped appendage, and when I pulled it, the whole cage opened. I was free. Count your fucking blessings. Several pinprick sensations stung across my back as I stood up. On my seat, I could see several loosely tangled needles and tubes. IVs? I moved quickly, sliding between the rows of young victims, climbing over their cage casings sometimes. If I wanted to, I could have pulled the same hook appendage and freed several children as well. The thought weighed me down, a small anchor of guilt. But what good would that do? What if they cried out? What if I had to carry one? I had no clue where I was supposed to go. For all I knew, freeing a child may have been condemning them to something far, far worse. No, I was better off going alone, scoping it out. Rescue would have to be figured out later. When I descended past the last row and stepped on the gray, cave-like floor, I could see exits in at least 5 different directions. They were all sealed by tight aperture doors, all except for the tunnel that Buchan entered. I took a deep breath. The LEDs pulsated rhythmically, casting my shadow against the rows of young kids. My silhouette stretched into a long, scrawny shape across the helpless forms, like a spindly tree incapable of supporting anything. There was nothing for me here. I snuck down the tunnel. It was very hard to see in the pure, unassailable darkness. Clearly, the tunnel was designed for beings who could emit their own glow, not for fleshy human escapees. I kept my fingers sliding along the right wall, marching forward and making sure I didn't trip over anything. Eventually, I did see a mix of glimmering lights at the end of the tunnel. They altered between blue, yellow, and pink. It might have been Buchan or more like him, which sent chills down my spine, but I ignored the feeling and edged closer. Grime, soot, and I don't...
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cashback, and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cashback sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cashback. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Oh, what else clung to my fingers and clothes as I crawled along the wall? I was still wearing my Mr. New York outfit, which I'm sure was now streaked with God knows what. They might have taken my phone and keys, but at least they left me in my costume. I used the chef's hat to wipe sweat from my eyes. The lights danced brightly as I neared the tunnel's exit. It gave the impression of some kind of nightclub or carnival. As I came even closer, I could see indeed it came from a shimmering neon sign. Botonics Bazaar. What the hell? On my immediate right, I saw a space densely packed with cryopod-like chambers. Inside each chamber was the glowing hologram of a child looking at me with tired, defeated eyes. There seemed to be no one else around at this bazaar. I went up and put my hand on the nearest chamber. The little girl on the other side placed her palm beneath mine. She was saying something frantically. I see her shimmering, translucent tears trickle down her shimmering, translucent face. I wish I knew how to lip read. I had so many questions. What did they do to you? I stepped away and looked at the sign centered between all these glass chambers. Premium flavors. Chiba region. Half price. I reread the text several times to make sure I translated correctly. But that's what the words said. This was a stall, a storefront, and as I looked deeper into the grand hall I just entered, I realized could be dozens of them. Several storefronts, each offering a different variant. Flavors of Yamanashi, authentic Tokyo taste. Kanagawa flavor, 50% off. My bottom jaw had fallen somewhere along the floor. My hands clasped my head. What the fuck? Through the middle of this bizarre hall was a long connected row of tables and chairs, like you might find at the center of any food court. Except the furnishings there were clearly designed for beings much larger than humans. I approached the first table and spotted a single chrome bowl left on the edge. Inside, I could see a shimmering mix of pink and cayenne. Pace quicked. I sped down the large empty hall, trying to process what I was seeing. In between the flavor stalls were shops for all kinds of uncanny silver instruments. Spoons, bowls, knives, corkscrews, and other things I didn't want to look at. And every now and then, I'd spot a black column supporting the ceiling. On each column were glowing digital numbers. They said 8:57 like an old alarm clock on Earth. In a few moments, they read 8:58. I slid my way beneath the long cafeteria table and kept a low profile. And I'm glad that I did, because when the clock hit 9 o'clock, all hell broke loose. The ceiling became an LED explosion of sparks and lights, descending hordes of shimmering creatures down into the hall. But they weren't ravenous, bloodthirsty monsters like I was expecting. No. If I had to describe them, I'd say they behaved more like obsessive shoppers at a mall. I watched from the floor as a hologram monkey mascot
covered in donut sprinkles, prepared his shimmering pair of tote bags. There was a bipedal dog with pancakes for ears, who ran over to some glass-chambered children for sale and started smelling each one. There was even a weasel, made of churros, who was giving out coupons for specific stalls. They were all animals infused with dessert elements, which meant they were all likely characters designed at Bakery Park. But did that mean they were all harmless virtual mascots at one point? And somehow now lived underground, enjoying humans as flavors?
I want the fresh boiling from Kanagawa, the one with the glasses. I've heard these creamy types from Shimado are the best. How much? Where are the 4-star smart ones? I want a new pet, and then I want to eat him when I get bored.
I could see their illuminated hoofs, paws, and bird feet walk back and forth across the bazaar grounds. They were crowding around close to where I was hiding. Tongue clenched between my teeth, I stayed beneath the tables and skulked forward, putting my heels down before my toes, making as little noise as possible. With their attention on the merchandise, no one seemed to notice a lone human scuffling away between the cafeteria benches. But I knew I wasn't safe for long. Once they all started eating, I'd be toast. I crawled from table to table, maintaining momentum until I heard a loud, familiar voice through a loudspeaker.
Friends, old comrades and newly arrived, please gather around for our morning auction.
I could practically hear the sharp teeth inflict on marshmallow lips. It was Mashumaru. A stampede of glowing claws, tails, and feet all gathered at one extension of the hall. I could see pushing amongst the attendees, everyone wanting a spot.
Today's auction is going to be the name Shigeru Tanaka. His family had worked at a Japanese embassy for generations. They also own and operate one of the largest contiguous farms in Hokkaido. To inhabit his body would be an experience, wealth, and luxury amongst the top 5th percentile of the surface world.
Oohs and ahs arrived in unison.
Shigeru had no siblings, which guarantees you will inherit much, if not all, of his family's exemplary estate and connections. For a vessel of this caliber, the bidding shall begin at 3,000 nodes.
I looked ahead of me and noticed that the crowds of feet were thinning. Every glimmering mascot was drawn to the auction. It quickly grew heated.
I offer 4,000!
8! 12,000! 12,000 nodes from the fellow in the back.
Mashimaru spoke with proud satisfaction.
12,000 going once, 12,000 going twice, 16!
Seizing the opportunity, I crawled further away, only breathing when I needed to. Perhaps if I kept my head down, I would have found another exit to this bazaar. Perhaps if I kept my head down, I would have found an alcove to hide in and learned much more about this place in general. But unfortunately, I did not keep my head down, not when I heard the screaming. The hysterical, ear-bursting screaming. It came from a child. An intense empathy cut through my heart. A deep-rooted compassion that went beyond just the care for another human. It was like a mammalian instinct, a primal desire to save the young, squealing thing from an all-too-early death. I couldn't help but poke my head out from under the tables and look back. Sure enough, I could see a human boy still in the flesh, dangling by his feet. It must have been the ripe one plucked by Buchan not long ago. The living rib cradle had reformed into a hanging post that the kid could not escape.
44,000 nodes going once, going twice!
Gasps of astonishment bubbled through the crowd. Clearly such a bid had not been offered for some time.
sold to Mamachi for 44,000. Well done, sir. For those who don't know, Mamachi is one of our oldest progenitors. He's been at this for a long time. You deserve to retire well, old friend.
I could see Mashumaru shake hands with a particularly pixelated-looking hologram. Mamachi looked like he had lived inside an 8-bit game all his life. I will enjoy retiring as an 8-year-old affluent progeny. I will ensure our island stays safe. Unanimous cheers drowned out the small boy's cries. Mashumaru initiated a long mechanical lancet to descend from the ceiling. It resembled an oversized syringe. I watched helplessly as the needle entered the boy's neck and sucked the life from his eyes, quite literally, because the syringe chamber suddenly filled with a digital life form of the boy. His life essence had been removed and hologramized.
All right,
Mashumaru smiled.
Brace yourself.
An antenna was struck into the center of Mamachi's pixelated body, absorbing him inside the metal instantly. Then, the needle still inside the boy's neck lit up like a flash of lightning, and suddenly, the lifeless boy was awake again, complete with bright yellow eyes and a sinister grin. The possessed child was deposited back into a walking black cradle amidst a final round of applause.
Thank you all for attending,
Mashumaru hollered.
Let us bid farewell to Mamachi as he enters the elevator.
My attention was rapt. Elevator? The spidery cradle walked over to an indented circle on the floor. Puffs of dust shot out as the circle lifted by a foot. It was a platform. Above, I could see a correspondingly large open circle on the ceiling. Little Mandela patterns lit up around the perimeter. An elevator, right here, right now. Maybe it was my overconfident youth, or maybe it was because I had just been exposed to a new definition of hell, but I felt like I could do it. I had to take a chance. My plan for stealth was an all wishful thinking anyways, whereas though this mad dash had a very real chance of escape. When the platform lifted 3 feet, I bolted out from under the table and broke into a sprint. By the time any of the hologram mascots noticed me, I was already within leaping distance.
What is that? A human? What is it doing here?
My jump could have been better timed. I may could have landed on the circle more cleanly, but I grabbed a hold of the edge. I was still on. Pulling for my life, I hoisted myself up onto the lifting platform. The only thing on board was the black stationary cradle. Inside it was an 8-year-old kid who had leered at me with menacing eyes and a frozen smile.
James Naka, employee number 604373, is that you?
I looked to my left and saw the hovering, bewildered face of Mashumaru. He levitated alongside the platform as it raised.
Did you forget I could float?
The marshmallow tanuki snapped his fingers and the elevator stopped, but not until we were 3 stories above the ground. I had nowhere to run.
Shit. What a surprise to see you here. I was saving your auction for the off-season. No one wants an ancient 25-year-old. Were you trying to save yourself the same embarrassment?
I fell to my knees and begged, keeping my hands up high over my head. I didn't know what else to do.
Please, I won't tell anyone about any of this. Just let me go.
Won't tell anyone?
Mashumaru enjoyed wallowing his own laughter.
The same way you wouldn't tell anyone where you had found Kato?
He pointed at my wrist with a glowing stamp. It seared in pain.
the same way you agreed to work at the confection showroom.
He slapped my floppy chef's hat off my head. It fell onto the crowds below.
James, I like you. I really do. And I gave you many, many, many chances to play along. But it's too late now, my friend.
The metallic arm holding the syringe descended from the ceiling again. I could hear it whirling behind my head.
No. Please, no.
You've besmirched yourself, James, and the public display has likely voided your auction, if I'm being honest.
I could hear Mamachi's spider cradle stand again, its limbs clawed into my back, holding me in place. I held my hands together as tightly as I could. I closed my eyes.
Please, just send me home.
I spent an eternity waiting for the obliterating sting at my neck, or for Mashumaru to zap me in the dust. But nothing happened.
Send you home, huh?
Mashumaru spoke pensively.
You know, that might not be a bad idea.
When I opened my eyes, I could see an antenna poking inside Mashumaru's body. He giggled, as if the metal prong could tickle his white belly.
Let's try it. Let's send you back to America.
I could feel a long, thin needle delicately enter my neck.
What?
Mashumaru giggled some more as the antenna grew bright.
Not alone, of course.
The shock in my neck came with such force, it felt like I'd been beheaded. I reached with my arms, but quickly lost all feeling. Before I knew what was happening, all I could see was white, colorless white. I had gotten my wish. I was free. My vision was working again, and I could feel the ground beneath my back. I was in the confection showroom. But as I got up to stand, I realized none of the movements were made by me. My body moved and walked and breathed and swallowed, but I wasn't in control at all. Some versions of Mashumaru had taken over the executive functions of my brain. I watched pathetically through my own eyes as this photonic monster controlled every muscle I flexed and every word I said. Immediately on the surface, I met with the big brass at Bakery Park. They congratulated me on a job well done as a cast member and agreed I should be given administrative control of installing the Bakery Park franchise somewhere in the U.S.
You've really proven yourself to us, Naka-san. You should be very proud.
I left on the ferry the next day, without saying goodbye to Nana Abasan, and without even reaching out or texting Aiko in any way. Aiko, if you're reading this, please DM me. I never wanted to leave you in the dust. Across several days, I watched Mashumaru delete nearly all contacts from my phone and my social media. In less than a week, he had personally insulted every meaningful contact in Japan and America I knew, burning every relationship, every acquaintanceship I ever had. All my connections were purged, save for my new managers at Bakery Park. It was fucking devastating. I was no longer a happy-go-lucky English teacher traveling the world to discover himself. I was an entrepreneur loaded with seed money to start a theme park in America. Mashumaru moved me to California, to a swanky apartment building in Los Angeles. To maintain the illusion of humanness, he even reached out to my mom and dad. Ironically, my parents loved the change. They said I was so driven now. They were amazed how I could afford to stay anywhere and how I was so close with such successful businessmen in Japan. I wanted to scream at my folks, who, by the way, never got along with the old me.
I wanted to tell them they were supporting the worst, most sociopathic version of myself. But of course, I had no voice in the matter. I couldn't do anything. Every now and then, Mashumaru would march my body to a washroom and have it stare at itself. He would smile, and I could see the disturbing shimmer in his eyes.
"What a good boy you've been," he'd say. "Kindness is never wasted."
Sometimes I'd watch him converse with other new bodies, the term he used for photonetically controlled humans, and then would talk about how their operations were going in Japan. He'd even meet with Kato. Yes, the same Kato that I rescued with Aiko at the start of all this. Even though Kato was just a kid, he spoke with an old man voice and was already involved in his family's shipyard business. It was disgusting just how far the conspiracy went, and how many normal flesh and blood people were supporting the photonic agenda. Bakery Park Satu-san, Kaibin, and even my supervisor Yusami-san were all just normal people, happy to upend their morals to keep their positions of power. Throughout Japan, I learned photonics were kidnapping about a dozen kids a day, which wasn't helping with Japan's population crisis. And in America, they were now starting to capture dozens of kids a week, and it was only going to get worse. Mashumaru had assessed a team of new bodies to buy some land in Anaheim. The U.S. Bakery Park is slated to be built sometime within the next 5 years. I had to endure every minute of every meeting, feel the sweat of every greasy handshake, taste the burn of every fruity vanilla cognac I would never drink. I had to watch myself become a soulless corporate monster intent on ending humanity. Up until a few months ago, I thought my life was truly over. And then I discovered my only saving grace. Each night when Mashumaru finally went to bed, my old body would briefly disconnect from him. For a long time, there wasn't much I could do because I couldn't control my old body either. But after a lot of effort focusing on my fingers and my toes, I was slowly able to reassert some control. Recently, I was able to start walking during Mashumaru's REM sleep, and only even more recently, I was able to start writing on this laptop. Mashumaru so far has no recollection of what I am doing in his rest, and I'd like to keep it that way. I have purposefully limited myself to only 1 hour or two each night. I've stealthily shot emails to a few select people through an Outlook account I've managed to keep hidden, but so far the responses have been fruitless. I've even created a secret WhatsApp to try to reconnect with friends who might help me. But they all think I've become a selfish, money-hungry shill. And so, over the last few days, I've decided to type up my story, this story, and release it to the world. I figured if I started at the beginning and explained the whole situation, then someone new might finally help me. It's been nothing but dwindling hope and misery ever since Aiko and I saved Kato from the confection showroom. A disaster of events. And you have every right to disbelieve me and think I'm crazy. Hell, I know I would. But if you're the person who had read my whole story, and you're willing to sneak massive packages into an address in LA without alerting Mashumaru, please DM me now. My goal is to get my life back. My goal is to unveil the grand photonic conspiracy to the world. My goal is to find out what happened to Aiko Agatsuma and save her if it's not too late. Please help. God bless. Thank you for reading. James Naka.